These are fun, off-the-cuff discussions on movies and streaming series, both new and old.
Together, we'll attempt to bridge the gap between Hollywood industry insider and the casual viewer.
This is Alec.
And I'm Ben.
And you're listening to the Cinema A to B podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cinema A to B. Today is a happy day for me because we're going to be talking about a TV show that I desperately love, and Ben finally got to watch it. 2020's Ted Lasso. So, fun thing, if you've watched this, you know all about it. Came in kind of the dark times, brought us this light, loved it. I lucked out and got to, onto it just after they released episode 4. So was able to kind of get into it early in 2020. The fun thing is, for you, Ben, you hadn't seen it at all. You just finished it. So 4 years later, after basically it released, after the dark times, so this is going to be a fun conversation because I think a lot of the love for this kind of hit of the timing that this came out. And I really am interested in your thoughts because obviously we're well removed from the pandemic and the craziness of 2020, and see if it still holds up, if it still has some of that greatness that has been given to it, or was it just a, you know, this was the, when it hit, really worked. So Ben, your thoughts.
So there's a caveat. I did not come into this fresh 4 years removed from the 2020 release. Okay. I saw the first two episodes of this on a flight in 2020. I don't remember where we were traveling to, but it was a long enough flight that I got episodes 1 and 2 in and loved it.
Okay.
But financially just made the decision, I'm not going to sign up for Apple TV Plus. That changed thanks to another show, Masters of the Air, which I'm right in the middle of. I'm a World War II nut. I had to watch it. And so I upped the subscription and then binged, season 1 of this. It's fabulous. I think it took advantage of a dark period during the pandemic, but 4 years removed from that, absolutely, it is still excellent. In fact, I would say, in the political climate that we're in right now in the US, that a show like this is as important now as it was then for being the warm little center of like really what life is all about, which is the people that you work with and that you care about. No, this show's excellent. I do kind of struggle with how much I want to actually dub this show in particular cinema. But honestly, if we can talk about comedies on this, you know, like Tommy Boy and we're going to call that cinema, this probably fits the bill because it is a single camera show. This is not a sitcom. This is single camera, tons of location shooting, not a ton of studio work, although I imagine the locker room and surrounding offices, facilities is got to be a set. I don't know why you would bother with a location with any of that, but no, it's fantastic. It's obviously very funny. It starts out very funny and then they start working in the more sentimental beats as we go. You know, it'd be easy to think that Ted is this cookie cutter character based on the first two or three episodes, that there's not much to him beyond his little quips and like his glasses half full kind of mentality. But that gets peeled back as we go and it's wonderful. And he's a very fully fleshed out, well-rounded character. And Sudeikis just nails it.
So quick caveat to the viewers. Ben has only seen season 1, if I'm correct.
Correct. Right? Yeah. We're just talking about season one.
We're not talking about the series. We're just talking about season 1. Right. So, and he has not seen season 2 or 3. I obviously have. Obviously, it's pretty obvious that I love this show. I have a freaking jersey of AFC Richmond. So,
a fictitious Premier League.
Now, keep in mind, I also do have for Dave Matthews Band for number 41, the song, and then for Beauford for the drummer. So, cause he wears jerseys. So it does like double duty. A lot of times, like when I wear it to shows, we were like, oh, that's awesome. So, cause they can get both, but anyways, that's beside the point. If you didn't know that I like Dave Matthews, it's been plain, throughout this show.
I think that everybody on YouTube knows.
Yeah, pretty much. So, anyways, so I absolutely adore the show. I'm going to take it a step and just say this is probably in my top three considered tightest first seasons or seasons in general of a show ever made. Like, there is no fat on this show. This show moves at a great pace. The characters are amazing. The character arcs are stunning. Like, it is done so well. And I'm a huge fan of Bill Lawrence. I love Scrubs, enjoyed Cougar Town. Really like kind of, you know, enjoy what he's done with a lot of things. And I think he can tell a great story. I feel like he has great eye for talent and bringing those in and getting people to work together. I honestly feel like Ted Lasso season one is the culmination of his career. Like this is his gem of like everything is done absolutely fantastic. I mean, obviously Jason Sudeikis was writing on it. Brendan Hunt was obviously writing on it as well. Brett Goldstein was writing on it. So like you have a lot of fantastic writers already in addition, but I think he's assembling this team. One of the biggest things I think was brilliant was obviously, you know, this came from a commercial series, you know, way back when, like, I don't know, like 8-10 years ago before the show. And they had a lot of good jokes. My favorite thing is they basically take all of the jokes from the commercial series and knock them out in like one press conference, like, or at least in the first episode. Like, it's pretty much almost done in the first episode. Maybe the second they'll have one or two, but they don't like rely and try to like sprinkle them in throughout the entire, like, obviously some of them, they build upon that joke, but the initial like referencing of the joke, like the offsides rule or whatever, is not, you know, they make fun of it in the commercials. They didn't try to like make these the funny parts. They found other bits to make funny. They also made other bits of comedy that I really thought grew this into much more than what it was as a commercial.
Yeah, I should say that this is not really in my wheelhouse to watch something like this. You know, when I go to a streaming service, especially one that's going to demand, you know, $10-$15 a mm-hmm. month from me, I gravitate more towards the adventure, sci-fi, action, big budget, you know, really big budget stuff. That's usually what I gravitate towards first, you know, Game of Thrones, and then obviously the HBO limited series like Band of Brothers and The Pacific and now Masters of the Air. So this isn't really the kind of thing that will grab me. And obviously it took me 4 years to watch all of it, but it is, it's superb. It's a very different brand of comedy than something like The Office, which I watched quite a bit of, not all of it, but most of it. But it all feels very familiar. No, I really was curious. I looked up the other day, how did British audiences respond to this at all? And they did not, like, unequivocally just don't watch it. And somebody surmised that they thought that in the UK that they thought it was a football show.
Yep.
And so they avoided it. They didn't. Why would I watch a show on football headlined by an American comedy actor? That sounds, why would you do that? And the show is most decidedly not about football.
No, not at all.
Or in this case, I'm going to say piss off everybody across the pond, soccer. But it's not about the sport. It's like you referenced with Moneyball. Mm-hmm. You love the front office, behind the scenes, what makes everybody tick.
Yep.
And this is that, and it's superb.
Yes.
And it hits all the right notes. You can be laughing and crying within the same episode. And that's really hard to do.
It is. I mean, and again, this is going back to some of the writing of just the talent you have in here of they have an ensemble cast for the most part. I mean, yes, it's a show called Ted Lasso and it focuses a lot on him, especially in the first season. But you have character arcs for multiple characters. I mean, you obviously Brett Goldstein's character as Roy Kent, you know, Keely Jones has an arc, even Hannah Waddington, she has an arc. I mean, and in some ways, Phil Dunster's character, he also has an arc. I mean, you have multiple people who have arcs in this. When, you know, we're complaining about shows that don't even have an arc, character arc or character changes for their main character, let alone tertiary characters here. I mean, so, and yet I don't feel like I've lost out on finding out more about these different people. Like I don't feel like going to Roy Kent and following kind of his arc, I'm losing out on stuff on Ted, you know, Ted Lasso, or, you know, in Hannah Waddington's and Rebecca's, you know, thing, like, or Keely Jones. Like I feel like they all interplay really well, but also enough time is given to each to really kind of flesh them out and fulfill that character arc for each of them in the first season.
No, you mentioned Roy Kent's probably my favorite character in the whole show. I mean,
absolutely.
And the reality is that it's like, you've known me as long as most people. I'm basically Roy Kent. I'm like a cross between Coach Beard,
yeah,
and Roy Kent. That's pretty much who I am. And which makes me to my segue. That's really one of the fun things about the show is, at least for the first season, you could pretty much find yourself in the show. There's going to be somebody, there's going to be some character that is either you or indefinitely people, you know, like in your circle.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, that's a Roy Kent. That's, you know, that's a Nate the Great, you know, somebody that's really unsure of themselves. That's a Higgins.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I'm wondering if the Higgins name was a nod to Magnum PI.
Really?
I probably not, but when they first introduced him, his name was Higgins, I smirked and was like, cause I watched a lot of Magnum growing up with where Selleck's caretaker was Higgins. But yeah, you can find these all feel like really believable people that we work with, or that's us. Like I said, I was watching Roy. I'm just like, yep. Yep. By the way, it was cool to see Juno Temple since I'd watched her in The Offer.
Yeah.
And you get to see how good of an actor she really is for her to go from playing Keely to the gal she plays in The Offer. Wildly different. So she's totally talented. They all are. There's nobody in this that like doesn't bring their A game. Mm-mm.
Or isn't a phenomenal actor. Like there's no one in here that I'm going, eh, you're a little rough comparatively. Like, you know, the only one I feel like is the overtop is the kid at the beginning who's like a legend mate or whatever. He wants to get an Aussie or whatever and stuff like that. Like he's the only one just like, that's a little over the top, but like it's meant to be. He's supposed to be like this kind of stupid little kid, but it works. Like this show, again, so many levels. It's so quick. It is so smart in its comedy as well. It's not playing to the lowest common denominator. It is setting up its jokes. It is following through really well. Like so many good quotes as well. Like I'm constantly quoting this movie. I've watched this show so many, like especially season one, so many times now. It is on regular repeat for Laura and I to watch this show. I mean, we love this movie. When we had a layover in London, it was like 12 hours. We were like peacing out. We went to Richmond. They're in like South London or whatever. So we could go and walk around the Richmond Green. We can walk around like the alleyways where he lived. We had lunch at the Prince's Head, which is where the bar is at, which fun fact, they actually recreated the bar. That's all studio. When they're inside the bar, that's all a studio. It's not actually the bar itself.
Oh, okay.
They only use the outside locale for it. So that, I mean, it was a treat. I mean, but even though like you could tell when you walk in that it is the inside of the bar studio set is very much based off of the actual real thing. Like you can see where that comes from. It's just slightly different. It's not like Cheers where the actual real Cheers bar doesn't look anything like the actual set of Cheers on the show. So it was fun. I mean, I love this. I absolutely love this. It definitely is obviously a feel good, but there's so much more into it there. Like you were kind of talking about, like there's so much you can take away of how to treat people, how to care for people. I mean, and also got me actually enjoying soccer, like wanting to, like after this, I was like, I want to watch me some EPL. And so Laura got me to finally start sitting down and watching football. So kudos.
I'm not there yet, but I mean, I played for a year and our daughter plays and I actually enjoyed playing soccer. I was just too, That's too slow.
It requires
a certain level of quickness. So,
well, let's be honest. If you tried a little bit harder, you'd be in the NBA right now. So
thanks, Vlad. Appreciate it. Appreciate you.
So going back to the Ted Lasso, there's a lot of fun little things. So you may know this already, but I'm going to tell you anyways. But so Brett Goldstein was actually signed on to only write the show. He was not supposed to be Roy Kent. So he had worked with either Bill Lawrence had seen him do a stand-up or seen him write on something else, or they'd worked together in some form or fashion, and kind of had reached out to Brett Goldstein, was like, hey, I'm doing the show. Come in. You need to write for this. And Brett initially actually either turned him down or was like about to turn him down, because he's like, he had a couple of stand-up gigs. And he jokes, he's like, I was going to do stand-up for like 15 people or 30 people, like the little small clubs or whatever. And then finally, like, Bill Lawrence was like, no, you need to do this show. And so Brett Goldstein like said, all right, cool. And so he signed on, and they couldn't find the right Roy Kent character at all. Like couldn't do anything. And so he's thinking to himself at one night, he's just like, I could pull this off. So he like sets his phone up, records him doing a bunch of little dialogue scenes or whatever, what he feels Roy Kent should be. And then he emails the rest of the writing staff with like the, hey, if you hate this, don't ever talk to me about it. Like, just like, let's forget this ever happened. This is, I think I can pull this off, but if you don't, I don't want to know about it. Like, we'll never speak of it again. And they're all like, you're brilliant. Like, you embody. And the funny thing is Brett Goldstein is like the most smiley person on the entire cast. Like, he's super like happy, super smiley. The only thing he really has is he curses like a sailor, much like Roy Kent. But I mean, right. He's also British. I mean, like, yeah, you know, they curse a lot over there.
That character, man. Yeah. Yeah.
I love the journey. I love the kind of, one of my favorite episodes is the third episode when he gives out the books to everyone. Yes. And he gives Roy Kent A Wrinkle of Time. And that's also,
yes. And he's reading it with his niece, and he's just like, damn it, or whatever he says, because he starts to get it, realize like, this is why
like, I don't want to lead, but I have to lead. Yes. Or whatever that quote is. But I also really like Trent Crim's character, and the scene in the Indian restaurant I think is just also brilliant. And how they do the voiceover narration of his article, of where they start with Higgins and then they switch into Trent like Crim right about the moment where he's knocking on, like Higgins talks about when Trent's knocking on Ted Lasso, but then they switch to Trent Crim's voice right as he starts to praise Ted Lasso of what he's doing. And I think like it's those kind of choices I think really work well that make it very interesting.
Well, I loved that scene because, you know, we both just adore Indian cuisine, but only to a certain point. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, this guy is going to be suffering
for definitely several days, if not week or more. There's so much in the show that went right. Like, it, obviously you have a good writing staff, you've got great actors, they gave it the budget to at least shoot it well. I mean, there's nothing, I would not say it's a stunningly shot TV show. It's not like I'm looking at the visuals going, oh my goodness, I'm blown away. But like, it's also not bad. Like, it's one of those kind of like, it's the seamless edit or invisible edit kind of. Like, I feel like it's almost like the invisible cinematography where it's good. Like, it doesn't need to be great. Like, that would actually take away from the show. But it's good, and it's so good that I don't really, I'm not drawn either to it for being so good, or I'm not actually taken out of it because it's a terrible shot or something.
I actually give a lot of credit to the cinematographer on this, because you're shooting in the same areas again and again and again. And so you have one of two ways you could go about doing that. You could just basically pick the same kind of setups and coverage every time that you're in the locker room. You basically shoot the scenes the same way, right? Just for...
Yeah.
To be quick about it. That's not what they did. And a perfect example is I feel like there's a scene near the last episode of season one or second to last. I think Lasso gives a big speech. I'm wondering if it's after they've lost and or not made the basically got relegated.
Yeah.
But they could have shot that really traditionally, but I believe that's the scene where they've intercut with this series of rotational shots around him. Mm-hmm. Like it's spin, like the camera's constantly doing rotating coverage around him. And they do things like that in, periodically in the show just to make things visually just more interesting. But yeah, the color grade doesn't need to be anything crazy, but it is super consistent. Like everything's very dialed in and consistent. Not to the point where it looks like a sitcom on the same set every time, but it's just, you know, they'll change time of day. You know, you might be in Rebecca's office at noon, or they'll have a scene where you're at Rebecca's office at night. And so they try to mix up the locations with time of day, but it's a cleanly shot show. It's great.
And there's so many like fun nods that they do just sports wise. They kind of bring in like, you know, very much American sports. Like, I mean, like the whole conversation that when Ted Lasso goes to talk about Jamie Tartt about practice, when he just does that entire whole speech.
Does the whole Iverson thing. Yes. Yeah, I caught it immediately. I was like, this is wonderful. This is amazing.
I mean, like, it's one of those little small things that is subtle. Like if you don't know about it, it doesn't take away, but if you know about it, it makes that scene so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely love the show. Like I said, Laura and I rewatch it multiple times. It doesn't get worse. It always gets better.
I love the recurring joke in season one, at least, with Ted and the tea. And he's just constantly trying it again. Yep, that's awful.
He's like, this tastes like pigeon sweat, you know? Yeah.
Or when he's like, so this is just a big joke, right? You guys don't actually drink this.
He's like, and Roy's like, I love it. He's just that's when he goes, it tastes like pigeon sweat. Or at the beginning, he's just like, I always thought tea was going to taste like hot brown water. You know what? I was right.
Yeah, it's... Right up to the last shot of season one where he's, that wasn't tea, but like.
No, but the sparkling water, yeah.
The sparkling water, they did that and they brought that full circle too. That opened the show with his first presser. He just spit it all over the place.
So one of the things you kind of talked about Ted, you know, they're making him an actual character, not just a caricature of what they wanted. And one of the things I love seeing it back on rewatches, and you may not have picked this up, but obviously you did, you may have. I didn't really at the time, but at the beginning when he's doing that press conference, that first press conference, he's just off the plane or whatever, and he spits out the water, he does get an anxiety attack, that panic attack. Like it has the same sounds, like beginning sounds or whatever. He starts kind of like moving his fingers like he did when he was in the karaoke scene. It was, again, I didn't, my first time, it wasn't until like the second or third time that I was like, oh my goodness, like no, this is a panic attack. He is having it. And so like, again, it's one of those subtle things, but you go back and you can see that they're tying these things up. They're taking the time to build this into the character and not just have it, you know, switch. Kind of like, you know, Khaleesi in the last season of Game of Thrones, where she goes from wanting to protect everyone to killing everybody instantly, right, like in the drop of 2 seconds or something. Like they're doing the work of making sure they're laying this framework so that when you do get there, it pays off, or you have that kind of earned, this is a problem for him.
Right.
So yeah, it's just really good. And you haven't seen season two or three, but they do definitely set up some things and continue pushing some of those jokes or some of those ideas.
Yeah. And I'm going to finish the show and we'll do probably two more episodes
on the other seasons, but,
or at least one more episode if I binge through two and three and we feel like we can speak to it. But yeah, I loved it. I looked forward to every, you know, I binge two or three at a time usually, you know, cause they're 30 minutes. 30,
yeah.
So it's so, like, I think there were eight or nine.
They're 10.
Was it 10 in season one?
10 in season one.
So you can get through it pretty quick when it's just 5 hours roughly of material in season one. I mean,
we haven't talked about him, but Anthony Head is fantastic as the bad guy. As Mannion, as Rupert Mannion. He is just astounding at how vile he is, but yet you can see, like, he plays him enough that you can see why he's charming and why people like him and are drawn to him. But then we get to kind of peek behind the curtains when he's allowing himself to also be that vicious, vile, you know, arrogant SOB or whatever, when he's talking like with Rebecca. But then when he's talking with other people, you know, he is happy. Like when he talks with May from the bar or whatever, you know, there's that kind of interplay between the two of them. And it's kind of like this friendly, not friendly, but like, you know, banter back and forth. But yet you also know, like, oh man, this guy's terrible. But yet people aren't seeing that.
He's basically a sociopath.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Like pitch perfect.
Yeah.
You know, another one we could, obviously the whole cast is just top to bottom excellence, but Phil Dunster as Jamie Tart is just incredible. Like just, yeah. And he has a nice arc too. It's a little more subtle, but definitely a fun watch to watch him and Roy go back and forth. Yeah.
And I'm sure that's a very typical relationship in a lot of locker rooms where you have the legend and the new up and coming star.
Yeah.
And at this point, I guess he's not even up and coming. I mean, he's
even if they were in similar points in their career, they would have been at each other's throats because their personalities, that's the classic clash of the flashy extrovert against the, you know, the introvert. And people like that butt heads all the time. I mean, even more so in professional sporting environments. So yeah, the whole thing doesn't feel dialed up too much. Like now Ted's character is just a unicorn, but you kind of accept that after a few episodes, you're just like, okay. I mean, he's just the one that's not like the rest. Mm-hmm. Until you kind of start to peel him back and then it's like, he does feel much more human, but everybody else feels
very
super,
real.
Super believable from the start. And so that, I think that's what helps is that he's surrounded by people that don't feel fictitious. Mm-hmm. So you start to buy into him a little more quickly of like, okay. Yeah. I don't know if I know a Ted Lasso though.
No,
I don't, he's the one that I'm like, I might have bumped into a Ted in the street, but I didn't realize, you know, they were.
The happy and the super caring all the time. Yeah, it's. I do like that Beard doesn't really have an arc though. Like he leave him a little bit in mystery.
He's the anchor, right? Like he's yes and no, because he does kind of finally like man up at the end and go ahead and like take the girl.
Yeah.
Like get her back. So he does kind of change.
But a little tiny arc.
It's nothing. Narrower. Yeah. 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 I like his character.
I do. He's like, fantastic.
Yeah. I like when he scoots away from Ted because Ted wants to start Roy. Yeah. And he's trying to stand next to him during practice he's just constantly moving away. And then Nathan does the same thing. He's like, oh, I see how it is. You're both going to do this? Okay. By the way, whatever accent I wonder what accent Sudeikis is doing. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to frame it. It almost sounds North Carolinian or Virginian. Like
he's originally from there. So he grew up in Kansas, but he was born in North Carolina, Virginia. I forget. I think it's Virginia. But it could be North Carolina. But he's
that makes sense.
He was born there.
Fairfax. He was born in Fairfax. So, hey. But yeah, he grew up not far from me in Overland Park.
Yeah.
Here in Kansas. A man of culture. I couldn't help but watch it, and it's mentioned here in the notes on IMDb, and I was thinking it when I was watching it. I was like, man, it wouldn't have taken much for Sudeikis to get into this headspace with the narrative of his marriage fracturing, because he was basically dealing with the same thing with Olivia Wilde, unfortunately. Yep.
And it's like moved across the ocean.
Moved across the pond.
Like, he lived it basically.
Mm-hmm, he did.
So
yeah. Just like you lived swingers.
Yeah. Very in many ways, in many, many ways. Oh yeah. That's a rough one for him. I know of obviously having a deal, but you know, having some little bit of, there were some issues, I guess, in some non-class moments between it, but, you know, it appeared that for a lot of it he was a little bit of Ted Lasso-y in that regard.
So just an aside, unfortunately, I didn't get to meet Sudeikis, but he was shooting We're the Millers in and around Wilmington, North Carolina at the same time that I was working on Revolution.
Nice.
And we got to hang out with their the editor and assistant editor. They were super cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, they were shooting just some a little bit for a few weeks or maybe a month or two out in around Wilmington for that movie. Good movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stiggs is great.
He is. He's really good. I'm curious what he does next, because the three seasons are it. Mm-hmm. As much as a lot of people might want more, he's basically been, that was the intent.
Yeah.
Which is so very British of them to do, because, and we've probably mentioned that before, that shows in the UK typically don't try to go on these long 5, 6, 7 season runs. It's 2 seasons and 3 and.
Yeah. 3 is a long running show over there. 5 is just super long.
I think they're better for it. I think you keep the quality high. And if you've got a beginning, a middle and an end already laid out, you should be able to accomplish that in 2 or 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And there's a lot to be said with that. If you have your kind of planned out storyline of this is what, you know, season 1 is, this is what season 2 is, this is what season 3 is. It kind of allows you to, like, there's going to be changes no matter what, because you're going to find certain characters actually do much better. But if you have at least the bricks of it, you know where you're going to end up, you know where you're going to go. Now, if you go too long, that's going to backfire, like How I Met Your Mother, where like they had it planned out from like season 1 of how they're going to end it, and it just doesn't work because the characters have changed so drastically over the 8 to 10 seasons that they were there that it just didn't land. It felt bad.
They were like victims of their own success.
Yeah. Yeah. Like at that point you need to revisit like how this needs to end. Whereas if you're sticking with your 3 season arc, then your characters have that time to grow into what you want them to be, but they don't outgrow your ending. So I'm interested to see what you think of the other two.
I'm looking forward to it. No, for sure. Yeah, I'm absolutely looking forward to where they take everything.
And I gotta say, and now I'm sure because you don't live under a rock that you know Hannah Waddington also has a role in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
As the Shane.
Yeah, it's harder to tell who she is. I recognize her immediately, but it's harder to tell because the costuming she's in. Yeah.
But she's absolutely fantastic. Like, my goodness, she is.
And just, apparently can sing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Her tail off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the karaoke scene. I was just like, whoa. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, like, if I was going to direct that scene, I wouldn't have told any of the cast that she can sing. And I would have set it up like real karaoke. Yeah. That way I can get their real reactions as soon as she starts to belt out those. I'm thinking that's what happened. Cause all the reactions in the team looked like, whoa, you can sing. And it seemed very genuine. It seems like an easy way to do that, to go about. Then you don't have to see a good director basically is there to make sure that the actors don't have to act 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
When you can give them an opportunity to just react, that's the best thing you can ever do. And then they can pour their energy into the scenes that they really have to dial in and act. Mm-hmm. But a scene like that, you just have her sing and then everybody's just like, holy smokes, I didn't know Hannah could sing.
Yeah.
But she comes across like a classically, I've not looked up her background, but she comes across as like a classically trained stage and theater actress. I just assume that because she's British, but aren't they all just classically trained?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Like, you know, you get your math, classically trained theater and music, you know, they're all, there's a reason why we have a lot of British actors over here that playing American roles and not so many doing the opposite. I mean, she plays that character to a T. She is just like, she plays enough where like she gets frustrated at Ted, but never really like is out to get Ted. It's really continuing that focus of trying to get Rupert, and plays it like talks herself into why she's ruining this man's career, you know, this man's life to obviously the means justify the end, or the ends justify the means. That's ends justify the means. But I do also love the scene where she does make restitution. Like, it feels really good. And it doesn't feel tropey at all. Like, it doesn't feel like this, well, you better tell him or not. And then somehow, like, I was just waiting for Ted to find out somehow, because that's how it happens. It's like, you need to tell him before he finds out or before I tell him. But yet they still allowed it to have that moment of reconciliation where Ted didn't know. Rebecca got the chance to tell Ted, and you got that really nice moment, that really good conversation between the two of them.
You know, and going back and forth. And he forgives her, and it made sense because of how she treated him during the panic attack. Mm-hmm. Like, it made sense for the character based on that interaction that he would forgive her, not just because Ted is Ted, mm-hmm. which to a certain extent, he does seem the way they've created the character that he would be the forgiving type, but it made perfect sense because it was like, if she really was this heinous person, she would have never been the one to come out to the alley and see if he was okay.
Yeah.
That would have never occurred. And it did. And so it made total sense that the character's like, yeah, I get it. Like not only that, but like, we're both going through like messy, you know, relationship divorce stuff. So
it's, I mean, like you said, it's got some heavy moments along with the comedy. Like, this is why I love the show so much.
I think good comedies need that.
Mm-hmm. And you need that to grow your characters as well. You need to see them in the valleys as well as the mountaintops. So,
yeah.
And I just need Roy to say the F word another dozen and a half times because, yeah. My goodness, it's hilarious every time.
He's got a weird tone when he gets loud, too. Like, just like, like he goes up like another octave when he's like yelling. Yeah, it's really funny.
And he definitely doesn't talk in that voice. Like, in real, I got to see him. He came to DC and we got to go see his live stand-up show,
which was really funny.
And he's definitely got a higher pitched normal voice than Roy Kent.
Right.
He definitely talks down, you know, to Roy Kent. But he's perfect as Roy Kent. Like, absolutely perfect. And it's one of those nice things where he doesn't, like, or at least, you know, in his show, he talks about it, because obviously that's the elephant, you know, the elephant in the room of, we all know him from this thing, not from his stand up. And so, like, he's getting to do stand up because of Ted Lasso. But he goes on and talks about that. And he's just like, about how much he enjoyed it and was scared to do it. Hadn't really acted before. Like, how is it? What is this going to do to change my life? And but he appreciates everything that it's given to him. Like, it's not one of those people who gets like, oh man, I'm always going to be remembered as X, as this character. Like, I cannot get past, like, Harrison Ford always jokes, he can never get past being Indiana Jones, you know, or Han Solo. Like, that's going to follow him until he dies. Like, people, and like Brett Goldstein kind of seen, like, at least at the moment, is really kind of leaning in going, I have so much to thank for this character and for Jason Sudeikis and Bill Lawrence for giving me the shot to get to this point where I can, instead of talking to 15 to 30 people in a small pub, I'm, you know, doing my stand up to a couple thousand people.
Yeah. That comes with maturity, coming into things later in your career.
Yep. And it's fun because another little plug for something else you could watch, but there's a, with Harrison Ford in it, not Jason Sudeikis, but there was a Apple TV show called Shrinking that came out that has Jason Segel in it, but both Bill Lawrence and Brett Goldstein write for that show as well. So it's like, I kind of came together with like Jason Segel. Similar, but different in the same way. But
well, I've still got to play catch up on 2023 films. So
same.
Yeah.
Just so many things.
Well, you want to wrap us up
on Yeah.
last so, of season one?
Oh, man, I love a season. I do. Yeah. I think, again, it's for me, it's hands down probably one of the best first seasons, or even just seasons altogether. I've said it already once on the pod, but it just is great from episode one to episode 10. So well done. This is good art. This is how, like, you make a good show. These pieces, you have to have good writing. You have to good people doing everything, and you put it all together. If you don't have one of those, this fails miserably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I'm looking forward to wrapping it up here in the next coming weeks and months. Yeah.
Well, you got to finish Masters of Air. So,
well, I'm only got like three more episodes on that. So,
yeah, I got to do that too.
But they're staggering that. So it's not like I can binge it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you everybody for joining us on our talk of Ted Lasso. Finally, we talked about Ted Lasso. I know. So if you're listening to us on our audio only, thank you so much wherever you are in the world, because we are global. We appreciate all of you who are not in the US listening to us. It's great. We really appreciate it. But we also appreciate you in the US who are listening to us. But hopefully you got to enjoy the show. If you hadn't seen Ted Lasso, obviously there was a ton of spoilers, so sorry, but you know, we're past that. It's in the zeitgeist, so you should know most of this happening anyways. But we will be back next Monday with another episode, and thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.